This is an India Today exclusive, the first interview to an Indian channel and one of the first few to an international network. I'm being joined by Russia's Foreign Minister, Sergey Lavrov. Thank you so much for joining us here on India Today, sir.
Nice to see you.
The big question that most are asking is the reason for this operation, the reason for President Putin to take the country to war at a time when we've seen negotiations and talks taking place. What was the reason? We know that America said that Russia is going to carry out operations. New Delhi certainly was not aware of it. Many countries said that it is not something that is going to happen, but it did happen.
Well, the real reason is the complacency of the most countries in the world after the end of World War II, when our Western colleagues, led by the United States, declared themselves winners, and in violation of their promises to the Soviet and Russian leadership, started moving NATO eastward. They kept saying, don't worry, this is a defensive alliance, it's not a threat to your Russian security. But defensive alliance it was when there were NATO and the Warsaw Treaty. And there was the Berlin Wall, as you remember, both physical and geopolitical. And it was very clear what is the line of defense for this defensive alliance. When the opponent disappeared, both the Warsaw Treaty disappeared and the Soviet Union disappeared, they decided that they will move the line of defense eastward. And they did this five times without explaining against whom they're going to defend themselves. But in the process, building the advance assault capacities and choosing the former Soviet republics, especially Ukraine, as the springboard against the Russian interests. And as early as 2003, for example, when they in Ukraine had another presidential election, the West was publicly and bluntly demanding from Ukrainians, you must choose, are you with Russia or with Europe? And then, of course, they started pulling Ukraine into European Union Association Agreement. Mm. The agreement provided for zero tariffs for Ukrainian goods into Europe and European goods in Ukraine. And we did have free trade area agreement with Ukraine in the context of Commonwealth of Independent States. So we told our Ukrainian neighbors, guys, we have zero tariffs with you, but we have protection with European Union because we negotiated WTO entry for 18 years. And we did manage to protect with considerable tariffs for some period of time, some sectors of the Russian economy, agriculture, insurance, banking, and some others. So we told them, if you have zero with Europe and zero with us, we're not protected against European goods, which was the part of the deal when we entered WTO. So then when Ukrainian president in 2013 understood the problem, he asked the European Union to postpone the signature of the association agreement, and we suggested that the three of us, Russia, Ukraine, and EU, could sit together and discuss how to proceed. European Union, in a very arrogant way, said that this is none of your business. We don't put our nose in your trade with China, with other countries. So this is going to happen. And then the president of Ukraine decided to postpone this ceremony, and next morning the demonstrators were in Maidan, so to say, in Kyiv, and they started the protests in early December 2013, which culminated with some bloody events in February, and European Union helped negotiate a deal between the president and the opposition. Next morning, the signatures of the European Union representatives, France, Germany, and Poland, were absolutely ignored by the opposition, who staged a coup and declared that they are creating the government of the winners, that they will cancel the special status of the Russian language. They threatened to throw Russian ethnic Russians away from Crimea. They sent armed groups to storm the Crimean parliament. And that's how the war started. And when Crimeans said, "We don't want to have anything with you, leave us alone," they were under the threat of the armed groups. And then they staged this referendum, and the eastern areas of Ukraine said, "Guys, we don't support your coup, leave us alone." They never attacked the rest of Ukraine. The Putschists attacked them, having called them terrorists, and they called them terrorists for the 8 years, for the long 8 years. We managed to stop this bloodshed in February 2015. The so-called Minsk agreements were signed, providing the eastern Ukraine with some special status, language, the right to have some local police, special economic relations with the adjacent Russian regions. Well, basically the same as European Union negotiated for the north of Kosovo, where Serbs live. In both cases, the European Union failed totally to deliver on what was guaranteed by the signatures of its members. And for the 8 long years, the respective governments of Ukraine and presidents of Ukraine were bluntly, publicly saying that they are not going to implement the Minsk agreements, that they will move to Plan B. They continued to shell the territories of these proclaimed republics during all these years. And we warned the Europeans, the Americans, and the Ukrainian government that they are ignoring something which was endorsed by the United Nations Security Council. To no avail. My last point, I understand that people don't want to go back into this history because they prefer to take events on their immediate merit, but the events, indeed, these particular events are rooted in the desire of the United States and what we call collective West to rule, to dominate the world, and to just show to everybody that there would be no multipolarity, it would be only unipolarity, and that they can declare Iraq, Syria, Libya, Yugoslavia, located 10,000 miles from the United States, threats to their security, and can do whatever they please there, leveling the cities like they did in Mosul in Iraq and Raqqa in Syria. But when Russia is warning all its colleagues that just on our borders you have been creating a springboard against us, you have been pumping arms into Ukraine, you have been totally ignoring the legislation of Ukraine which prohibited, completely prohibited the Russian language, you have been ignoring legislation which have been encouraging neo-Nazist ideology and practices, and the neo-Nazist battalions, which were, very much active against the territories who proclaimed themselves independent and who were promised special status, it's inside Ukraine. So, and, well, of course, the very latest development, in because it was all linked with Ukraine becoming NATO springboard and NATO expansion. And they were saying that Ukraine will be in NATO. Nobody can stop Ukraine if it so wishes. And then President Zelensky said that he might think about coming back to possess nuclear weapons. And in November last year, my president suggested to the United States and to NATO to sit down, to cool off, and to discuss how we can agree on security guarantees without further expansion of NATO eastward.
Right.
They refused. And in the process, Ukrainian army radically intensified the shelling of those republics in violation of all ceasefire agreements. And we didn't have any other choice but to recognize them, to sign mutual assistance treaties with them, and in response to their request to send our troops as part of the special operation to protect their lives.
You've provided basis, history, as well as the present context, sir. But you also said, President Putin himself said, that this is not targeting civilians or the citizens, people of Ukraine. It is to do with the administration. Now, we know that in international foreign policy parlance, it has been used quite often, not in my backyard. America says it all the time. Many other countries say it. But should an entire population be punished for an administration wanting to carry out independent foreign policy?
I don't think it's about any independence. Since 2013 and maybe even earlier, hundreds and hundreds of the US, UK and other Western security and military experts have been openly sitting in the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense and the Ukrainian security apparatus, and they basically were running the place. As for the civilians, immediately when this special operation in response to the request from Donetsk and Lugansk and in full compliance with the Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, when it was announced by President Putin, he said that the sole purpose of this operation is to demilitarize and denazify Ukrainians, because these are two intimately linked problems of that country, and we have been targeting only military infrastructure. Unfortunately, the Ukrainian army and so-called nationalist battalions, which are using Nazi insignia, swastika, which was borrowed from Indian history but twisted the wrong way, and the insignias of Waffen-SS battalions. These people were using and continue to use civilians as a human shield. They were placing the heavy weapons in the middle of the towns and cities, next to schools, next to kindergartens, to hospitals. And the internet is full with the testimonies of the people who were living in those places and who were asking these people not to do this. Unfortunately, nobody in the West actually pays attention to the facts which we have been providing. Instead, they are staging some fake situations, like a few couple of weeks ago in the place called Bucha, where the Russian troops left on the 30th of March, I think, and for 3 days the city was back in the hands of Ukrainian administration. The mayor of Bucha was publicly saying that we are back, the city is back to the normal life, and only on the fourth day they started showing images of dozens of corpses lying in the street, which was only a few days before shown as being back to normalcy. So this kind, and then a few days later in the city of Kramatorsk, which was fully in Ukrainian hands, they summoned people to the railway station and attacked them with the missile, Tochka-U missile, and it was proven beyond any doubt that the missile was fired by the Ukrainian army. That's why next morning it was out of the news in the West, because the obvious nature of this provocation was understood by everybody. Now the New York Times says that they have the proof that earlier that the cluster bombs were used by the Ukrainian army. So speaking of civilians and the rules of international humanitarian law, I can once again assure you that our army operates against the military infrastructure and not against civilians.
Mr. Lavrov, sir, the fact that you said that Russian forces have only targeted military facilities. Now, even if there are military facilities or tanks that have been placed in civilian areas, Russian forces did not show restraint in taking them down. And hence, there are civilians who've been killed. There has been bloodshed. whether it is the outskirts of Kyiv, primarily Mariupol, Volnovakha, absolutely razed to the ground. Some responsibility will have to be taken by the Russian also on the bloodshed.
It's always terrible when military activities bring damage to the civilians and to civilian sector, to civilian infrastructure. As I said, when people who have been killing Russian, ethnic Russians, citizens of Ukraine in the East for 8 years without any TV representatives, be it Asian, be it African, be it Latin American, be it European, be it the United States, paying any attention to this. When the Russian journalists have been working on the Republican line of contact site 24/7, showing the atrocities committed by the Ukrainian neo-Nazis and Ukrainian armed forces. During those years, no single foreign journalist cared to come to the other part of this line of contact to see what was going on there. And the statistics available through Organization of the Security and Cooperation in Europe indicated that the damage inflicted to the civilians and to the civilian infrastructure on the side of the republics, proclaimed republics, was 5 times more and bigger than the same figure for the territory controlled by the Ukrainian government. This is not to say that we can, you know, just ignore the victims and the damage to the civilian infrastructure, but once again, I want to emphasize a very important thing. This outcry started only when the Russians decided to protect Russians who are citizens of Ukraine and who were absolutely discriminated. There was no outcry when the city of Raqqa, for example, in Syria, was leveled with dozens and hundreds of corpses lying there unattended for weeks and weeks. The American military never had any scruples about achieving their military goals, be it in Syria, be it in Iraq, be it in Afghanistan, for that matter. And this is a tragedy when people die. But we cannot tolerate the situation when our Western colleagues say that we can do anything we want. And we can encourage the government in Kyiv to be as Russophobic as it takes. We will not tell them to stop prohibiting the Russian language in education and media. We would not tell them to ban all Russian-speaking channels, including Ukrainian channels. We would not tell them not to persecute the opposition who favors some dialogue with Russia. And we would not tell them to stop violating their commitments to give special status to these territories where Russian-speaking population dominates. And
you make a very important point, sir, because India Today has traveled to Donetsk, and we have been putting out those reports. And they're important because it is important to understand the plight of Russian descent and Russian-speaking people in Ukraine. And there is no taking away from that. And we will talk about Donbass, but coming back to the allegations against Russia on genocide, on war crimes, and on the fact that chemical weapons have been used by Russian forces, what do you have to say to the visuals? You're saying that there were no bodies. There were bodies in the basements that have been found much later, that would have been found anyway much later. Will there be no investigation that will be carried out? Why just say that it did not happen?
We are investigating the atrocities of the neo-Nazis battalions of Ukraine and of Ukrainian armed forces. There is a special commission created in Russian chamber. We have it. Anyway, there is a public organization which is very experienced. They have been discovering the fakes staged by so-called white helmets in Syria, in many other cases, and we will not cease our efforts to establish the truce. We are used to the fact that the United States, United Kingdom, and other Western countries have a very interesting habit. They just throw in a news when they believe this news would work ideologically for their benefit. And then when it comes to facts, and when more and more facts are discovered, which put big question mark on the assertion, they just lose interest. 2007, London, poisoning of Mr. Litvinenko. Huge outcry. The trial begins, and after a few weeks, the trial is made public, which in UK means secret. Until now, we cannot get the facts about what actually happened to Mr. Litvinenko. 2014, Malaysian Airlines, Boeing, shot down over Ukraine. We presented huge amount of facts. We requested that we be part of the investigation. No way. Ukrainians, who did not close the skies during the conflict, were invited to this special investigation group. Russia was not. Malaysia, as the owner of the plane, was invited only 5 months later, after the Australians, the Dutch, and Malaysians agreed among themselves that anything coming out of this group must be subject to consensus. Meaning, Ukraine, which did not close the skies, had veto power on this investigation. So we could not get the truth on this one as well. 2019, Salisbury poisoning. The people disappeared. The only proof which was made public is highly likely, as Theresa May said. The Brits insisted on expulsion of Russian diplomats by most of the European countries. And when I asked my friends, did they provide the proof beyond the public statements about highly likely it was Russia? They said no, but they promised to. I checked 1 year later whether this was done. It was not done. And so on and so forth. 2020, our opposition blogger, Mr. Navalny, was poisoned. We asked the Germans, and we immediately, responded to the German request to let him go to the Berlin hospital. 24 hours later, after the request, he was flown to Berlin. We don't have any confirmation who was flying with him, where did they get the bottle, which is the key, element in this investigation. And when we asked the Germans to show us the formula which they discovered in his body, they said, this is military secret. It is us who, until now, insist on the truth about Litvinenko, about the Skripals, about the Malaysian Boeing, and about Navalny. The stories which they stage in Ukraine these days are from the same nature.
Going back to the investigations, you're saying that the Azov battalion, and absolutely shameful, yes, they should be investigated. They are not, they are neo-Nazis, and they should not have been incorporated and integrated into any military regime in any country. But will you introspect and look at your own people as well? Is there any, instead of denying and rejecting claims, will there be an investigation against your own people? If they have done wrong, will they be held accountable?
We have our law which prohibits the military to do anything which is not allowed under international humanitarian law. Any violations are absolutely registered and investigated. And I will on Azov, it's interesting you mentioned it, because Azov was listed in the United States, I think, in 2014 or 2015, as a group which cannot be supported, which cannot legitimately operate, and it was prohibited by Congress to provide any assistance to this battalion. Everybody forgot about this, or rather they certainly remember what this group is about, and they decided to put their money on this group. In Japan, as you know, they passed a special decree by the government that Azov is no longer a neo-Nazis group, and the Japanese government apologizes for listing Azov some time ago as such. And of course, when President Zelensky, in his camouflage, was asked about Azov by another journalist who felt, you know, that something was wrong with these neo-Nazi trends, and Zelensky said quietly, "Well, Azov, they are what they are. We have many groups like this. They are part of our army." The media started asking questions about Azov only when the military operation was launched. For the long 8 years, nobody lifted a finger. Nobody bothered, about what was being groomed in Ukraine. Continuation, or rather resurrection, of what was boiling in Europe in 1930s.
President Zelensky said that Russia plans to use tactical nuclear weapons.
He says many things. And depends on what he drinks or what he smokes. He says many things.
Do you think it was a strategic miscalculation by President Zelensky to take on Russia when there was no certain assurance from NATO and the European Union that they would actually back Ukraine?
President Zelensky came to power with the promise of peace, and he said that he will reach peace on the basis of the Minsk agreements. A few months later, he said he cannot implement the Minsk agreements because the Minsk agreements are not unimplementable.
Because Russian were then DPR.
No. He never said that, you know, this was because of the military situation on the ground. He said that it's unthinkable for Ukraine to give special status to any part of his territory, of its territory. But it was very thinkable, if I may say so, when Ukraine was created, to put together the territories which now in the West never celebrate the Victory Day, 9th of May. And on the other hand, the territories in the East, which would never celebrate the heroes honored in the West, those who collaborated with Hitler. So with this difficult composition of territories, to say that Ukraine can only be unitary state, and that I would not give special status to these people, even if the Security Council demands so, it was, I believe it was not very farsighted. Had he cooperated, as he promised to his electorate when he was elected, had he cooperated in implementing the Minsk agreements, the crisis would have been over long ago.
Did the West betray Zelensky?
No, I think the West played Zelensky against Russia and did everything to strengthen him in the desire to ignore the Minsk agreements. Well, the West is a broad notion. It's the United States and the Brits. The rest of the West, including the European Union, is now just obedient servant.
So, tactical nuclear weapons, will Russia ever use them?
Ask Mr. Zelensky. We never mentioned about this. He mentioned this, so his intelligence must have provided him with some news. I cannot comment something which a not very adequate person pronounces.
As a P5 member, as a nuclear power, will nuclear be an option at all? Is it on the table at all?
When the Soviet Union and the United States in 1987, Gorbachev and Reagan decided that they have special responsibility for peace on this planet, they signed a solemn declaration that there could be no winners in a nuclear war, and therefore nuclear war must never be launched. After the Trump administration came to office, we have been telling them, because you know the tensions were aggravated, and we said, why don't we try to send a positive political message to the entire universe and to reiterate what Gorbachev and Reagan pronounced. They, during all the 4 years of the administration, they refused to do so. But we were really encouraged when President Biden was inaugurated 5 days after his inauguration, and we have repeated this offer. He first agreed to extend the START treaty without any preconditions, which the Trump administration was not ready to do. And in June, in June 2021, when they met with President Putin in Geneva, they issued this declaration. On our initiative, this declaration was issued. After the Americans and the Russians said that there must be no nuclear war, don't even think about it, we started to promote the same commitment in the context of the P5. Not the United States, not UK, not France, Russia. And eventually, earlier this year, in January this year, the P5, at the level of the presidents and heads of government, issued the statement which we initiated and which we were pushing through for all these years.
So nuclear is off the table. Only last
year. This statement, both the Russian-American statement and the P5 summit statement, were issued on the strong insistence of the Russian Federation.
Coming back to the Donbas region, DPR, LPR, and now it has become non-negotiable for Russia, the independence of these republics.
Yes.
When you talk to
yes.
Ukraine. What happens if the negotiations succeed between Ukraine and Russia, and should there be a settlement? Will Russia then withdraw from other areas, Sumy, Kharkiv, Zaporizhia, Kherson, Mykolaiv?
I thought you were a journalist and you can be a spy. I'm not discussing the military operation for obvious reasons. It is never the case. On the territorial situation, yes, we recognize them in the administrative boundaries of the former Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republics. And the Minsk agreements were signed when these two territories were split roughly half and half. And now these republics, the militias of these republics are fighting to get their territory back. Because when they held referendum in 2014, it was held on the entire territories of the former regions. But then the coup leaders started the war, which they called anti-terrorist operation, and they took considerable chunk of both regions. So yes, we recognize them in their declared territories as a result of referendum.
Which in fact includes Mariupol and Volnovakha,
yes,
as part of Donetsk.
Yes.
My question is whether if there is a settlement between the two sides and they recognize, which President Zelensky has said he will not, he says that they are going to fight for Donbas to the very end. So where are the red lines then?
I cannot intelligently discuss what President Zelensky says, because he always changes his mind, diametrically. He was initiator of the negotiations, which we accepted. At some point, we were disappointed because they were changing their mind every time and coming late, leaving early. But then in Istanbul, about 1 month ago, I think in March, a couple of weeks ago, in Istanbul, they brought a paper saying we are not going to be a member of any military alliance, we will be neutral, we will ask In return, we will ask for guarantees, security guarantees, preferably P5, maybe some others. And these guarantees, it was written and initialed by the head of the delegation, these security guarantees which we are asking for, they will not cover Crimea and the territories in the east of Ukraine. It was not our language, it was their language. Now President Zelensky says, no way. Well, they started, backtracking even earlier, but this is a paper with the signature of the head of their delegation. So before we can intelligently discuss what he says one day or another, we need to have clarity about credibility of this person and about his team.
Was there any understanding in Istanbul on the withdrawal of Russian troops from Kyiv as well? Was there an understanding as to why we changed
configuration of our presence, and this was announced immediately after Istanbul, that since we believed that they brought something which could serve as a basis, we made a goodwill gesture and we changed configuration in the Kyiv and Chernigov area. And this was not appreciated at all. Instead, this butcher thing was immediately staged and played like Skripals were played in Salisbury, like Malaysian Boeing, like Navalny, played, but immediately, put aside when the hard facts were presented, which they cannot challenge.
I traveled to Zaporizhia. There are mayors that have been appointed now by Russia in Berdyansk and Melitopol, and they're saying that they will hold referendum, that they're not going to go back to
utmost democracy, right? Referendum.
So we are looking
people saying what they want.
But sir, then, which means that you're securing your land boundary in Sumy and Kharkiv, but also the waters. If you look at Zaporizhia, Mykolaiv.
Look, people, when people have been suffering, have been suffering in all these places for long 8 years, where neo-Nazis were, prohibiting them to speak their own language, prohibiting them to celebrate, to commemorate the heroes of World War II, of the Great Patriotic War, prohibiting, to have parades and to have any events to commemorate the fallen, the parents, the grandparents of these people. And now when they have thrown away those neo-Nazis and say that now we will decide who will be running the place, this is our mayor, this is our legislature, I believe this is the manifestation of democracy after so many years of oppression.
It seems that Ukraine has lost more land than they would have gained by negotiating on Donbass.
It's the decision of those who have been running Ukraine, of those who have been sabotaging the Minsk agreements in spite of the Security Council, UN Security Council decision. We are not up for the regime change in Ukraine. We have said this repeatedly. We want the Ukrainians themselves decide how they want to live further, in a way which would not repeat the Minsk agreements, when they did decide that they don't want to do anything with the coup leaders who immediately said that they are against anything Russian, culture, language, everything which these people cherished. And then they were promised something by the European Union and cheated. So we want the people to be free to decide how they want to live in Ukraine.
Russia is one of the most sanctioned countries in the world. How long can you sustain?
I don't think we are thinking in the context of sustaining. Sustaining means, you sustain, you take some hardships and hope that sooner or later this would be over. the decisions which we have been taking during not only this period, but for many years, because Russia has been under sanctions all along. Jackson-Vanik, then Jackson-Vanik was repealed, but Magnitsky Act was introduced. Then we were punished for the free vote of the Crimeans. We were punished for supporting those who were in favor of keeping the Minsk agreements, but the Ukrainian government didn't want them to get what they were promised, and so on and so forth. So now we have come to a very straightforward conclusion. We cannot rely on our Western colleagues in any part of our life which has strategic significance, be it food security, which we managed to ensure ourselves after 2014, be it, of course, defense, and be it some strategic sectors where high tech is developing and indicating the future of the mankind. We did not have time to achieve self-sufficiency in all these areas, but in most cases, we resolved this issue. And of course, we are open to cooperation with all other countries who do not use illegal or legitimate unilateral measures in violation of the UN Charter. And India is among those. We cooperate bilaterally. I visited a couple of months ago. And we cooperate in many international organizations.
Speaking of India, India is under immense pressure to sever ties, to cut down imports of energy, of fuel. But India has stood its ground. In terms of reliability, is there a concern that India should have with regards to the kind of defense cooperation both countries have? Could there be delays in deliveries of critical weapon systems that India is buying from Russia, such as the S-400s? What is the conversation that you've been having with New Delhi on this front?
Well, India is our very, very old friend. We called our relationship long ago strategic partnership. Then, about 20 years ago, the Indian friend said, why don't we call it privileged strategic partnership? And sometime later they said, not enough, let's call it especially privileged strategic partnership. This is the unique description of any bilateral relations, I think, of India and of Russia. And with India, we have, you know, long before all this became such a hot potato, we supported Prime Minister Narendra Modi's concept, Make in India, and we started, substituting the simple trade with local production, shifting production of the goods needed by India on your territory. And it was for quite a number of years already that we have been promoting the use of our national currencies in settlements between the companies of two countries and the governments of two countries, promoting the national financial information systems, transmission systems, when you like SWIFT, you know,
yes.
But you have your own, we have our own, and they're being used more and more. Payment cards, we have MIR system, you have RuPay. They are mutually supportive, and it's not huge percentage of the overall volume of trade, but it is steadily growing. And on defense, we can provide anything India wants, and the technology transfer in the context of defense cooperation is absolutely unprecedented for any of India's outside partners.
We have CATSA waiver from the United States of America for the S-400s. But future collaborations, could that become difficult?
You know, when the Americans say that they are in favor of democracy all over the world, they mean only very specific thing, that it is up to them to decide who is democracy and who deserves to have some good attitude on behalf of Washington. When they convene this summit of democracies, you only need to look through the list of invitees to understand that it's not about real democracies, it's about something else. And when the Americans now run all over the world, the ambassadors have the priority number one to go every morning to the foreign ministry, to the government of the country where they serve, and to say, you must stop talking to Russia. You must join sanctions against Russia. And, well, I understand, because long before this crisis, I have been talking to the Americans, to the Europeans. I told them, when you say democracy, 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 and you always at the conferences want this language, rule of law and democracy. And I asked them, what about adding that apart from national level, we want democracy and the rule of law internationally? They don't like it. And when they push everybody in this camp, anti-Russian camp, and when they go to India, when they go to China, to Turkey, to Egypt, countries with their own thousand years of history, of civilization, of culture, and when they are not even ashamed to publicly tell you what to do, I believe something is wrong not only with the manners, which always has been the case, but something is wrong with mentality. And when you spoke about S-400, when Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State of the United States, says, we, the United States, has not yet decided whether to introduce sanctions against India for S-400s publicly. They have not yet decided what is good for you. And his Undersecretary Wendy Sherman lately said, we must help India to understand what is important for its security. How about that?
And I suppose your counterpart gave them a befitting reply on how to conduct one's foreign policy.
Oh, absolutely. I respect Subramaniam Jaishankar very much. He is a seasoned diplomat and he is a real patriot of his country. When he said, we will be taking the decisions on the basis of what India believes it needs for its development, for its security, it's respectful. Not too many countries can say something like this.
But you mentioned China. For us, the China factor is very important. Russia has a unique relationship when it comes to ties with China and ties with India. You mentioned United States of America, so I'm going to go back to U.S. Recently, in one of the visits, the Deputy National Security Advisor said, should India continue ties with Russia, there will be consequences. And if there is such an incident at the LAC, then U.S. will not come to India's rescue. There are two. The statement is flawed because there are two points. One, he said, should there be another incident, not recognizing that the Chinese are still on Indian soil. Secondly, he said that they will not come to India's rescue. They had not come in the first place. But where does Russia stand?
Well, we stand in favor of resolving any conflicts on the basis of arrangements negotiated directly between the parties. Like, just quoting for once again, Ukraine, just like it was in Ukraine when the two parties, the rebels, as they are called, the separatists, as they are called, for us they are self-proclaimed republics on the one side, and the government which came to power as a result of the coup on the other side, had a deal negotiated and endorsed by the Security Council. It's another matter that the government, with the instigation of the West, failed to deliver, but the method is the one which is which we believe should be applied everywhere. We welcomed, after those incidents on the border, we welcomed the resumption of the discussions between the military of India and China, the discussions between the politicians at the level of the foreign ministers, and we hope that this would be resolved. We would never say, you know, we cannot use those threats which are absolutely normal for the Americans, or else there would be consequences. It's the favorite, statements. Those are favorite statements. But what we would like to do as Russia, we would like to promote the formats where India and Russia and China participate together. It started in 1996, 1997, when Russia's foreign minister at that time, Evgeny Primakov, suggested RIC format, Troika, Russia, India, China. And it happened, and we continue to convene in this format. I think last November there was probably ministerial meeting number 20, and not only foreign ministers, but ministers of economy, ministers of trade, political scientists meet. Maybe this is not very much publicized, but it is a very useful format. And we were very much in favor, even we were the leading force in Shanghai Cooperation Organization to promote full membership of India together with Pakistan in this organization, which is also giving another premise for China and India to be together in the company of their neighbors and to build more confidence.
Finally, before I let you go, sir, Europe is looking to halt gas from Russia. Gas from Russia. Come summer, their policies might get harsher. But you're looking at de-dollarization of the global energy market, by dealing in rubles. How do you propose to do that? Should they start halting?
There would be no change for the Europeans and other countries who buy our gas. The reason for this decision was very simple and obvious. When they frozen the Russian assets in dollars and euros and yen and pound sterling for the amount of more than 300 billion euros or dollars. Those were mostly the money kept in Western banks after we received payment from them, from the Western countries, for our gas deliveries. In other words, they paid us and they stole the money from us because those were the currencies which are linked to the Western banking system. So what we told them to do, they would not be paying directly to Gazprom accounts abroad. They would be paying to a bank. It's called Gazprom Bank. It's an independent entity. They would be paying the same amount which they have to pay under the existing contracts, but they would pay these amounts to special account which they have to open in this bank. And there would be a parallel account in rubles. So they pay euros, and then inside this bank, these euros are transferred to the ruble account, and then from this account, Gazprom itself receives rubles.
So you're not running losses at all on the money that Russia has to receive from Europe? You're not running losses, or there's no money that has been stopped, that rubles is
coming
in?
That's exactly, because as of now, they would not be able to keep the money in their banks, the money which they not even owe us, which they paid to us already. I believe this is something which does not contradict contracts. They would still be paying in euros or dollars or whatever was the currency of the contract. But we will have insurance that this robbery would not happen again.
finally, sir, before I let you go,
Eastern Ukraine, I have to go back to that question. Intensification of war efforts now in Eastern Ukraine. Is the trigger the flagship Moskva warship that sunk? What really happened there? Is that one of the triggers now why we see more intensification against Ukraine?
No, this operation in the east of Ukraine is aimed, as was announced from the very beginning, to fully liberate the Donetsk and Luhansk republics. And this operation will continue. It is beginning, another stage of this operation is beginning, and I'm sure this will be a very important moment of this entire special operation.
And what happened to the warship?
For the Ministry of Defense. They explained what happened, and I cannot add anything to this.
On that note, many thanks for joining us here on India Today. Indeed a pleasure, sir.
Thank you very much.